staggering across the bridge's roof. Kali firing her rifle in slow motion, things exploding in grainy red detail. When the machine stopped, Gus's eyes snapped open. "We're here," Kali whispered, softly singing the words. He pawed at his face. "Where's that? Everything's dark." And it was. There was no moon, and the stars were only just beginning to flicker to life. There were shapes, however, lines in the surrounding void that took on greater meaning. Houses, or buildings, large ones across a single street. Then a door opened somewhere behind him, cracking him into alertness. Sarah Burton appeared alongside the truck, her face barely visible in the dark. "We'll stop here for the night," she told them. "Where's here?" Kali asked. "Place called Shortbow. It's between Driftwood and Smooth Rock Falls." "And we stopped because it's night, girl," Sarah snapped, as if the answer was obvious. "And this was our escape plan, to loop around and go north if we were ever driven off the island." "I like plans," Kali said calmly. "What's the rest of yours?" "We bunk down here for the night and decide on things in the morning."
"Got a backup place to go?" Gus asked.
Sarah faced him. "No. Matter of fact, we don't, but we got this place and some things stashed away in case we had to make use of them."
"Hope you got a bed then," Gus said.
"Your lucky day, sailor," Sarah said, and walked away, her feet clicking on pavement.
"My lucky day," Gus repeated. "You hear that?"
"Oh yeah," Kali said.
"You agree with her?"
"To a point. I do know where we are, however."
"That was interesting." "Yeah?"
"Yeah. We're close to where we want to be."
"How close?"
30 clicks close, as the crow flies."
"I've seen some fucked up crows."
"In a straight line then, okay?"
That interested him, until he realized people were moving around the pickup.
The headlights were off, but someone switched on a flashlight, revealing parking lanes laid out across a vast sheet of concrete. A mighty wall of glass appeared, set upon a brick foundation, and stretched out on either side of what looked like a warehouse. An awesome display of all things, bedroom furniture was tastefully arranged behind the intact glass. Beds and mattresses, night tables, lamps, and matching chests of drawers were all on sale, with prices printed upon white cardboard cutouts of exploding balloons. Large lettering was fixed above the main entrance. "Lazy Lou's Mattress Heaven, your one stop for all things bedroom."
"Oh my," Gus said to himself, taking in the impressive storefront. "Lazy Lou, I like you already."
"Damn impressive," Kali said. "About the size of a small stadium."
Gus saw that. "Lou's been busy."
"I remember this place, actually. Drove by it a few times."
"Never went in?"
"No need to," Kali replied. Sarah inserted a key into the main entrance door and opened it, ushering the islanders inside. "Go on in," Sarah told them. "We'll lock up once we're all in. We'll park the trucks out back in the loading zone. There's a rear door there." Gus nodded, and with Kali at his side, they walked into Lazy Lou's Mattress Heaven. With a name like Lazy Lou, Gus really wasn't expecting much. He was wrong. He was so spectacularly wrong. Someone flicked on a second flashlight, its beam weaving through the various displays of furniture before finally settling down. That, combined with the first flashlight, revealed a showroom the size of an aircraft hangar containing a veritable dreamscape of bedroom decor. White lanes guided shoppers through a display wonderland of bed sets, complete with tasteful comforters and luxurious satins. Night tables stood as sentries, and upon every one was a matching lamp and price tag. Mantles were covered with assorted books. Snow-white canopies were tied back with braided rope. Someone had even placed tasteful sets of nefarious tea candles throughout, highlighting the possibilities of cozy home decor even more. Not only was there a reserved showroom displaying all manner of potential room configurations, there were whole sections of individual items as well. Mattresses of all sizes, quilts and comforters for all seasons, pillowcases and sheets made of Egyptian cotton and possessing thread counts in the tantalizing thousands.
Bedroom furniture ranged from kids to adults, art deco to rustic, retro to contemporary, and all priced to sell, individually or in complete sets. Taking in that vast cavern of nocturnal delights, the first thought to enter Gus's mind was that Lazy Lou had a serious fucking hard-on for bedroom furnishings. A serious fucking hard-on. God damn it, Lou, Gus said under his breath. Nothing lazy about him, Collie added. No, ma'am. This is unchecked insanity. The hell is this place, anyway? And it's out in the middle of nowhere. Lazy Lou's pretty big west of Ontario, Bruno said nearby.
Bought my bedroom set from him, someone said.
I think he's in BC, added another voice.
Chain of 20 or 30, with one in Hawaii, I think, said yet another. All right, Gus groaned. He's the king of bedrooms. I'm not going to argue the point. Obviously, he had something on the go.
Lie a while, a voice sang softly. Lie a while, and if you're gonna lie, lie in style.
Gus frowned. He didn't know Lazy Lou from an asshole in the ground, but he sure as hell knew he could come up with a more imaginative jingle than that.
Sleep anywhere, Sarah Burton said to the group. Maybe back from the windows. There's plenty of partitions to give you privacy if you want it, but don't go too far. Lots of pillows and blankets, comforters. Grab anything you want. Sleep and we'll have a group huddle in the morning. Talk about where to go from here.
You posting guards? Collie asked.
Sarah traded looks with Rich Trinidad.
I'll watch the front, the gunslinger said, until I get tired. Then I'll swap out with whoever's willing.
I'm willing, Collie said.
Yeah, me too, Gus threw in. Although he was eyeing one contemporary bed set complete with what looked like a propane fireplace, the whole thing radiated an alpine ambience that made him think of winters and season-long hibernations.
Good, Sarah said. That's good. Get some sleep, then. I'll get someone to watch the rear doors.
Eva had a chat with Bruno, and the man walked away with her and Monica. Corey had already found a corner of his own and was taking his shoes off. Gus continued sizing up his chosen bed, a silky midnight black affair that would definitely have been out of his pay grade once upon a time. Yet there he was, about to pass out on one. The notion put a smile on his hairy face. Every now and again, the apocalypse would do you a favor. Collie placed a hand upon his shoulder then, the contact electric, and led him over to that Swiss dream.
You read my mind, he whispered.
More like, I saw you drool.
It's a dream, Gus said, stomping at the base and focusing solely upon the bed. An alpine dream. I mean, I ain't ever getting over to the Alps, but if I did, I'd want my hotel room to have furniture like this.
See the price? She pointed.
He did a double take.
Jesus Christ, how the hell do they justify that? Swiss elves make that thing or something?
Collie glanced around, eyeing the rest of the group. Some wandered around back corners, but most stayed well within sight. She went to one side of the bed, a sizable queen, and perched herself on the edge.
Oh my,
she said, running a hand over the comforter.
Nice.
Try it.
Gus sat down.
Oh my sweet Jesus. I can feel a smile across my ass. Right across my ass, both cheeks.
Keep your voice down, people are going to sleep.
Gus supposed so. If they were camping out on such comfortable islands like the one he was planted on, they'd be asleep in no time. He swung his legs onto the bed, boots still on, and stretched out.
God damn, this is coming with me. Wherever we go, I'm taking it.
Beat sleeping on the ground.
And shitty-ass motels.
Collie lay on her back and stared at the ceiling. Around them, the group was settling in with sighs and similar whispers of disbelief. Someone farted, a goose shot prompting a giggle that Gus knew belonged to little Monica. He realized then that he hadn't checked on her or Bruno to see if she could say anything more than mindless, and how it was she came to call the undead that name.
Well, he whispered, thus ends a fucked up day.
Ended pretty damn well, if you ask me,
Collie whispered back.
Not for some of those campers.
Well, you're right there.
You got time to talk?
Silence, then. Sure, for a bit. Until I start snoring anyway, what's on your mind?
Gus turned onto his side to face her, adjusting his junk as he did so. Just wanted to continue that conversation we started back in the woods there.
Go ahead.
Who are they, Collie?
The pricks with the masks? Who knows? Never saw them before. Another bunch of road crazies, maybe looking for others. Like us.
Not like us if they're using deadheads.
Suppose not. I just hope they're not religious. Those bunnies give me the creeps.
What do they want?
Collie paused. I don't know, Gus. Hard to say. Some people just want to survive and pick up the pieces. I know we're looking for people to carry on. To salvage what's left of the knowledge pool, the skill pool, not to mention the gene pool. But others. Others will see an opportunity.
To use dead things like that? To sick 'em on people like dogs?
She frowned. More like shock troops. Think of it. Why waste your living soldiers when you have a corps of fearless, ass-munching glue bags at your disposal? The sight of that charging you is a scary thing. People would think it was the breakout all over. Whoever was staring down that might very well decide to drop everything and run. For their homes or their rides. If it's their homes, maybe those people get trapped in there. And, well, it's up to those leather dicks to get them out. Sort of like hounds chasing the fox into a hole.
And if those people get away? Gus asked.
Good question. Maybe they keep on hunting.
Jesus.
Yeah, Collie agreed. Well, we got guards posted.
But where are they getting the gimps?
I don't know, she admitted sadly. Maybe they're people who refuse to surrender. Or what happens to subordinates who fuck up? We've seen the dead rot away into nothing but heads, so these guys must have saved a specimen. You might very well be right about keeping a reanimated head or two around. They could sling that over a wall and wait out the craziness inside. A weaponized biohazard all over again. I tell you, the depth of insanity people can sink to fucking amazes me.
Christ almighty, Gus whispered.
We don't have enough information yet, Collie said. But I think we're close on that. Our purpose is pretty clear-cut these days. You survive or you don't. You rule or you follow. Any way you cut it, there's always some sick puppy around to twist things to suit their own agenda.
But using zombies, Collie?
I know. It's fucked up.
A silence followed. One last thing, Gus eventually said.
Sure.
What was it you were going to say? He asked. Back on the trail.
Collie faced him, her dark eyes twinkling despite the dark.
You really want to know?
Yeah.
You're not going to like it.
Tell me.
It's just a theory, but you're really not going to like it. If I'm right, that is.
Collie.
I'm trying to say it's pretty fucked up.
Collie.
Okay,
she relented.
Fair warning, and all that bunk. And remember, I have nothing to back this up except for what I saw. We know the undead retain some of their senses, smell being perhaps the strongest. We were doused with some pretty strong shit just before the meatbags came charging after us. I think that their handlers...
The leather douchebags.
Yes,
Collie smiled.
The leather douchebags. I think they figured out a way to direct the undead. The MBs came right for us. Not the masked douchebags. Drawn to a scent that they can't resist.
Gus couldn't believe what he was hearing. Holy shit.
Collie smiled again.
See? Told you.
That is fucked up.
Explains a couple of things. How the undead came running after us when there's perfectly good meat right behind them.
Why urine? Gus wanted to know. I mean, why not blood?
Don't know. Maybe blood goes bad. Maybe it's not about quality, but quantity. Everybody needs to take a leak sooner or later. So there you go. Blood is a little more troublesome to collect, harder to store. But urine. Everybody's got to take a whiz sooner or later.
The only problem you got there is stockpiling the stuff, and no worries about it going bad. Not if you only need it to stink, right? Probably stinks even more after a few days.
Easier to smell, Gus added.
Exactly.
Gus turned over and peered up toward the warehouse ceiling. He was speechless.
Feel like sleeping now? Collie asked.
Not right now, but give me a few seconds.
No problem.
Gus turned to her, and she watched him, their faces less than a foot apart.
What have we gotten ourselves into here, Collie?
She took her time in answering.
Not sure, but we're here. We're in it, and we'll get clear of it.
Gus didn't say anything to that.
Even if we have to break some balls to do so, Collie finished.
22. Sometime after midnight, Collie returned to bed after her shift of guard duty. Gus lay underneath the comforter, the thick edges pulled up to his ears. She watched him for a bit, as his snores softly buzzsawed the vast cavern of the showroom. After several seconds, she placed her rifle upon the floor and sat down on the side of the bed. The mattress didn't groan, but Gus's head flinched.
"That you?" he whispered, half asleep.
"Yeah."
He dropped back onto the pillow. Collie peeled the comforter back and slipped into the bed beside him. It was cold on her side, making the heat from his body all the more attractive.
"Busy night?" he asked.
"No," she said, turning towards his back. "That guy Davis is on watch."
"Black Eye Davis?"
"Yeah, that's a good name for him."
Gus shifted, burrowing deeper into the established warmth. The smell of sweat enveloped him, but she knew she smelled just as bad, so it didn't bother her. The dry heat radiating from him, however, was another matter entirely. Unable to resist, Collie moved closer and slid an arm over his ribs, spooning him, pressing herself up against his frame as if she were hugging a furnace. That woke Gus up just a little more, and he turned his head in a question.
"Just getting comfortable," she murmured. "You're so nice and warm."
"Wish you didn't do that."
"Do what?"
"That."
"You mean me spooning? Didn't think you would mind."
"I don't, but you're waking up my dick."
"Got a feeling it doesn't take much to wake him up," Collie whispered.
She pressed her chest into his back, hooked a leg over his, and held on even tighter.
"You better settle down if he knows what's good for him."
They lay in bed that way, front to back, tighter than a wet knot.
"Collie."
"Hmm?"
I have a problem."
"Still got a chubby?"
"Well, actually, I do. Half a chub anyway, but something else."
"Yeah, what?"
He released a long sigh.
"Just so you know, I find myself thinking about you a lot."
That quieted her, and she frowned ever so slightly in the dark.
"A lot?"
"Yeah."
She had to be careful about the next bit, not quite sure how he was going to react.
"Well, that's good. I think about you, too. A lot."
"You do?"
"Yeah."
Nothing then for a few seconds. Then Gus tried to turn over, but Collie wouldn't let him.
"Not right now," she said, pressing her head against the nape of his neck. "Let's just sleep on this, okay? Why do you keep bringing this shit up when I'm ready to drop and cut some Z's?"
"Sorry."
"That's all right," she said, relaxing. "I'll punish you in the morning."
"That sounds nice."
"Thought you'd like that."
So they slept. Black Eye Davis sat in an office chair facing the store's front windows. He was positioned some 20 meters back behind a full bedroom display, with his arms resting on a hutch, his chin parked in the folds of his arms, and the rest of him out of sight. He had a clear view of Lazy Lou's front doors and the forbidding parking lot outside. Not that there was much to see beyond the glass. It had been only 30 minutes or so since he replaced Collie, but he was still exhausted from the past few days and regretted his decision to volunteer for the job. Still, he needed to do his part. Understood that they all had to do their part.
Rich had completed his shift, the local sheriff that he was, but even he needed to rest at some point. Collie as well. On that note, Davis rubbed his head, feeling the thickening grease coating his hair before prodding his swollen eye with a knuckle. Christ almighty, they'd worked him over. His body was covered in a collage of bruises. His captors had only given him one shot to the face, but they made it count. He could barely see out of the thing, and it watered for some unknown reason. Just up and started weeping whenever the mood took it, as if stuck in a mire of self-pity. Davis's other eye was fine, however, working a little double time to pick up the slack. Mentioning his eye might have gotten him out of guard duty, but he wouldn't feel right about that. He just needed some time to relax, that was all. Like everyone, he supposed. He sniffed, catching the faint pissy smell lingering off his ass and marveling at its power. A bath was in his future. Next body of water he spied, he was going in, even if he had to jump from a moving truck to do so. He focused on the windows again, looking past the lines and pointed corners of the bedroom sets, past the clear panes of glass and the empty void beyond that. Davis had to admit if it wasn't for the occasional snores and grunts of the group spread out in the warehouse, he'd be feeling very much creeped out. For security, Trinidad had given him one of his many guns, the make unknown to him. It was a gun, and that was enough for Davis, and it rested not 5 inches away from his right hand. His eye started to ache. It did that every now and again. A dull, knife-edge ache that pulsed at the very back, all the way into his brain. As if someone had stuck a butter knife in there, left it, and flicked the goddamn thing whenever they felt like it. Just twanged it, like it was a balloon hanging off a door handle. Davis hoped that as the swelling went down, the discomfort would go away. But he wasn't sure. He'd feel better if and when he could see the doctor Collie had mentioned. That would put his mind at ease, and he hoped things would work out so that he would have access to some honest-to-God medical attention. A real-life doctor. The idea seemed incredible in this day and age. Getting quality care from a trained professional and not having to look shit up in a book or guessing what wild herb did what would be a tremendous relief. Davis shook his head and smiled, remembering a time when he and his friend Barry argued over whether some mushrooms they discovered on the summer island were edible. They decided to test them for safety's sake and ended up being quite stoned for the better part of the day. Funky times. Davis's mirth faded when he realized Barry hadn't shown up after the onslaught earlier in the day. He'd been left behind on the island, probably dead, or worse. The night sky would brighten in the next couple of hours, and the world beyond the glass would slink back into existence. Davis couldn't believe how damn dark things got on a cloudy night, when there were no street lamps or fires or anything. It was all so surreal, and more than just a touch eerie, which made him grateful he wasn't on any of those medicinal mushrooms they'd found on the island. He wouldn't mind a bottle of gin, however. Gin could armor a person to the bone. He gazed at the glass and surrounding framework of the storefront. Something caught his attention, just to the left of the locked doors. Collie said to wake them if he saw anything. Rich had said the same thing, but he wasn't a soldier, just a gun nut trying to be the law. Davis wasn't sure, however, if he was seeing something or just uneasy. He peered at that section of the glass, wondering what exactly had hooked his good eye. Nothing was there, however. Well, damn it, Davis whispered, listening to those peaceful snores in the background. He wavered, thinking on the next course of action before picking up the gun. It was heavy in his hand, and he held it at arm's length by his thigh. Damn it, he muttered. There was one main walkway splitting the front of the showroom in two, which led directly to the main doors. Davis crouched low, bent over at the waist, and quietly threaded his way through the assorted bedroom sets using the furniture to conceal his approach. He stopped halfway and squinted at the troubling spot in the glass. His danger sense was tingling, but damn if he wasn't sure what the hell he was looking at. With a quick check on what lay before him, Davis edged closer, stopping just behind a high chest of drawers. Was something moving out there? He couldn't be sure, as it was as fine as a black thread floating atop an oil patch.
an inky blot that teased him to come closer. Davis tapped the sidearm against his thigh, its weight comforting. A whistle filled the night air, and the frightening surge of an engine that just had its gas pedal stomped to the floor. Except Davis didn't realize it was an engine until the headlights flared to life, the spellbinding glare freezing him in place. Just as the front of the store exploded inwards with a clap of brick and glass and a gust of debris, Davis leaped away and bounced off a mattress where he tumbled onto the carpeted floor. His gun went off when he landed, sending a bullet through his right temple like a black thunderbolt that ended all thought. The burst of shattering glass yanked Gus awake, and the crackle of fabricated wood fiber, metal, and ceramics ripping apart almost made him shit the bed. Cold air flooded the showroom, carrying a gritty puff of dust. People screamed. Collie was already out of the bed and arming herself, while Gus propped himself up at arm's length, paralyzed by the smoking, hateful glare of headlights peeking out from behind a roadblock of smashed bedroom furniture. "Move!" Collie yelled at him, hoisting her weapon to her shoulder. Gus did, but he saw past the wreckage of the truck, saw the leather-clad figures storming through the breach, invading Lazy Lou's showroom. "Gus!" Collie shouted. That unlocked him, and he kicked himself free of the comforter. Thankfully, he still had his boots on, and he met Collie behind the bed's hutch, where she was already retreating deeper into the thicker patches of bedroom furnishings. "This way!" Sarah Burton shouted, running through the showroom. Gus followed, still trying to comprehend what was happening. The screams behind him were fading now, but he could still hear a clatter of bodies banging into unseen end tables and flipping over low dressers. An invisible corner of an easy chair clipped Gus's hip with all the force of a hammer. The momentum spun him sideways where he landed on a bed. He rolled off and landed hard on his feet. He hobbled into a run, fixing on the islanders fleeing into the dark, scampering towards the rear of the building. One of the campers went down amongst the bed sets as if a rug had been pulled out from underneath her. Monica squealed, and he thought he glimpsed both Bruno and Corey hustling her through the showroom maze. Collie fired off a short burst, lighting up the dark and pulling Gus's attention toward her. She was threading her own retreat, skipping around low obstacles while hindering their pursuers. In the jagged, broken hole that was the main entrance, shapes invaded the interior and ducked out of sight, blending in almost perfectly with the dark surroundings. "Oh shit," Gus thought, and at that exact moment, clacked both knees on a block of solid wood. The impact was mind-freezing. Gus landed in a clump, his battered knees unsteady and hurting, both joints signaling that they'd been rudely hyperextended. He rolled and flexed, dealing with that wobbly wheel sensation while landing an arm across the very thing that had taken his legs out from under him. "Goddamn night table," he swore, wanting to shoot the miserable block of wood. "Move," Collie shouted from behind. Gus limped as fast as he could. Collie appeared beside him, keeping pace. "You okay? Almost broke my knees off. Keep moving. This way." She grabbed his left shoulder and pulled him along, dodging pieces of furniture and whole mattresses as they materialized out of the dark. Harsh puffs of air sped by them, some ending with solid wax. "Crossbows." They reached a wall where Rich Trinidad waited with a gun in each hand. "Go that way. Follow the corridor. I'm right behind you." Collie took the lead and Gus shambled after her. His legs still ached but were firmer, and the hall wasn't cluttered like the showroom floor. Rich Trinidad started firing behind them, the gunshots like fat firecrackers going off in Gus's ears. Ahead, lights flared brightly, illuminating a huge storage area just beyond an open doorway at the end of the hall. "Headlights," Gus realized, flashing against a loading bay door. Collie guided him into a sizable loading area where plastic-covered furniture shone wetly in the peripheral glare of the headlights. Huge rectangles of cardboard the size of garbage bins packaged and protected surplus furniture. The various blocks were stacked in towers against the walls on either side, resembling ancient ruins. Rising above it all were massive shelving units filled to capacity, creating a dusty pattern of straight beams and uneven blocks all the way to the ceiling. Two pickups waited on the main floor. The islanders piled inside the idling machines, their heads and shoulders bouncing around the interior. Gus caught a lungful of exhaust, and that got his mind off his knees. The islanders had parked the vehicles inside Lou's warehouse, but the sight of that paneled wall of the loading zone filled him with confusion. They might have had time to manually crank the door open enough to get the trucks inside, but he doubted the crazies would wait for them to do it again. Collie pushed Gus towards the nearest truck bed, and he rolled inside the box. She hauled herself in after him, flipping onto her chest and aiming for the doorway they'd just come through. Rich Trinidad was there, firing at unseen targets. Gus lifted his head, looked around, and was instantly mesmerized by the red warning light swirling atop a forklift. The machine rumbled towards the bay door, the forks already lowered. They slid into the lower end with a screech of steel. Hydraulics chuffed and wheezed and forced themselves upward with a clanking protest. Collie pulled Gus back inside and flattened him to the floor.
"Keep your head down."
Gus stared at her.
"If the fuckers chasing us know what they're doing, they'll have someone covering the rear."
His mouth dropped open at that thought. A second later, the lead truck shot out of the bay. There was a jarring slap of metal and a pop and jingle of strained bolts coming free. The last panel on the loading bay door flapped heavily over the pickup's roof with a squeal of hinges. The truck banked hard to the right, tires squealing, and Collie rolled across the box bed floor and crashed into Gus. The truck then slammed into a wall, shaking the pair to their bones before powering through in a screech song of tires and burning rubber. The escaping truck lurched forward with all the force of an unloading ballista. Dozens of impacts lit up both sides of the box bed, but the vehicle picked up speed. As they sped away, Gus looked back at Lazy Lou's warehouse. Low clouds hid the night sky, but about four pickups were parked across the rear of the loading area, barring the way. One pair, once parked nose to ass, now had a sizable gap between them where the Islander's truck had bashed through, leaving the two vehicles there resembling leftovers in a demolition derby. A second set of headlights, the other truck filled with Islanders, gunned for that gap. Collie pushed away from Gus. On her belly, she took aim and fired. Controlled bursts punched into the machines forming the roadblock, and they shivered with every bullet. Collie shifted, taking care not to hit the Islander's truck as it plunged through the wrecked gap and raced into the night.
"Thank you, Jesus," Gus muttered, watching as the second vehicle caught up with them.
They raced north, and at present speed, he figured they should have no problem escaping their pursuers. A second later, he heard a dismal fluttering, and his balls froze as if dipped in liquid nitrogen.
"Don't fucking tell me," Collie said, cocking her head.
Gus propped himself up, the cold night air whipping past his face. Their ride gradually took on a disturbing shimmy. He held on, disbelieving their luck. The driver braked and pulled off onto the shoulder.
"God damn it," Gus said, leaning over the side.
Flat tire, both of them on his side. Then he saw the crossbow bolts.
"No way," he muttered.
The Islanders were already getting out of the stopped rig. Corey jumped out from the passenger side and stepped back, inspecting the damage. He got closer and hunkered down, his face screwing up in distaste.
"What is it?" Gus asked.
"Nails," Corey reported. "Goddamn nails. Looks like we rolled over one of them spike strips, the kind the cops would use to stop speeders."
"Improvised spike strip," Collie declared. "Crude, but it worked. Fucked up all four tires."
"Everybody out!"
She slapped Gus across an ass cheek to get him moving. The other pickup waited alongside, filled with familiar faces.
"What about the truck?" Gus asked.
"Can't wait," Collie said. "Pile into the back and hold on to something."
She tossed her rifle into the box and went for the driver's side.
"Out," she ordered upon opening the door. "I'm driving from here on end. Get out or get in the back, but do it fast."
"Wait," Gus said, suddenly holding his nose.
She smelled it, as did they all. The first truck had rammed its way through the roadblock but ruined its tires in doing so. The second truck, while untouched by the nail strips, suffered a different fate. A disgusted Collie looked over the box wall and sighed. She used her rifle to reach inside and hooked the plastic bladder that had ruptured upon impact. She held up the dripping husk for all to see.
"Not the piss bags again," Gus groaned.
"Piss bags or not," she said, flicking the offensive matter away. "This is our only ride out of here."
Far behind them, but not far enough, headlights appeared. Several sets. That got the group's feet shuffling. No one wanted to get into the box.
If you can fit in, hang on, Collie said, leaving them for the driver's seat. Gus hopped for the passenger side, beating out Corey before he could protest. Where are we going? Sarah Burton asked from the back seat, mushed against the window. Little Monica was crammed in there as well, holding tight to a worried Bruno. Gus took a second to look at the man, disturbed by how dark and sunken his eyes were. What? Bruno asked. Nothing, Gus replied, deciding to keep his thoughts to himself. Collie hit the gas, throwing Gus back into the front seat. Buckle up, honeydew, she said, squaring her shoulders and holding the steering wheel at arm's length. We're going for light speed if I can get it. Where the hell are we going? Sarah Burton demanded, grasping the headrest. Collie kept her eyes on the road. North. We're very close to where we want to be. Where's that? Secret government bunker. That silenced the Islander. Collie glanced at the fuel gauge. We got a full tank here. That should get us up to Whitecap. Maybe. Did we lose anyone back there? The interior grew silent. With a dozen leather at his back, the Vulture stopped upon the threshold of the loading bay and stared out into the pre-dawn night. The mask revealed nothing of the frustration coming to a boil, but the guards surrounding the leader dared not whisper a word. The Vulture took a moment to study the wrecked trucks and the gap punched between them. He saw the improvised spike strip, or what was left of it. The trap had been laid out by the leather watching the rear door. There was a chance one or both trucks had their tires punctured. If so, the Vulture would find them and punish them for their continued impudence. Engines chuffed and growled to life around the warehouse, moving to the rear where the leather boarded their rides. A commotion at his back turned the Vulture around. There, being shoved into the loading bay, were the survivors they'd captured. Bruised and bloodied but intact. Three were forced to the concrete floor. Machetes tapped necks, keeping the prisoners in place. One of the lessers approached the Vulture. He paid his respects, and the leader bade the man to talk.
One is an office administrator. One is a bank teller. The other is an assistant manager for a hotel.
None of that impressed the Vulture.
Where's the girl?
The lesser shook his head. The Vulture turned his head back to the night sky. The lesser waited. Convert them, the Vulture commanded. The lesser slowly bowed, keeping his eyes on the leader the whole time.
We're going after them right away,
the Vulture repeated in his mind, fuming at how this small group of nothing flesh managed to once again deny him his prize. They were going somewhere, and the leather would follow them to the end. When that happened, the Vulture intended to make his displeasure very much known, and to take the prize for the dog tongue. From the shadows, two of the leather brought forth a box into the loading bay. A short time later, the sound of the motorized armada flared to life, drowning out the prisoners' screams of terror. 23. The pickup sped northward under dawn's spreading light. The mood inside had gone from frightened awareness to one of misery. Gus knew the feeling. The loss of a few more islanders had depressed the survivors. Their absence affected Gus as well. He didn't know one of the missing, but he knew Davis and Clifford, the other banged-up guy they'd freed from the trailer not so long ago. And he certainly knew Eva, quiet and composed and now feared captured. Not knowing what had happened to them bothered Gus, almost enough to tempt him to go back and attempt a rescue. Collie squashed that idea, reasoning there was no way a handful of them could possibly take on the small army of masked crazies, crazies who commanded an army of undead. Not when Whitecap beckoned. As long as they stayed ahead of their pursuers, Collie was certain that she could lose them in the maze of roads surrounding the mountain. So they drove, passing through the little town of Cochrane on Highway 574. At one point, Collie pulled over and got Gus to take a turn at the wheel. So he did, grateful for something to occupy his mind. He nervously checked his rearview mirror every 5 seconds, fully expecting to see a blazing display of headlights. Nothing of the sort happened, however. A hot wire of light crisped the horizon ahead.
The forest on either side of the road grew thicker, more distinct. Collie sat in the passenger seat, her sunglasses lowered, her expression neutral. The clouds broke apart, and the sun that peeked over the hills was a thing of beauty.
"Right there," Collie said, harsh daylight coloring her face. She pointed. "Slow down."
Gus did, spotting the turnoff onto a dirt road up ahead. He braked and stopped a few feet away, checking his mirrors as he did so. A sign that read private property had fallen over in the middle of the dirt road. Dried mud and dust covered the metallic sign, as well as the prints of tire treads. Along the shoulders of the road, however, was something even more ominous. Deep, industrial-sized tire prints stamped the earth, creating a stitchwork of great ruts and potholes filled with water. A ruined assortment of saplings and dead brush resembling snapped bones lay in the wake of those prints.
"What came through here?" Sarah Burton asked from the back seat.
"A big old truck," Gus replied. "Biggest one you ever saw."
That quieted her for a moment.
"A truck? Made those tracks?"
"You'll see," he said.
Gus exchanged looks with Collie.
"That rig barely fit the road," Collie noted. "Like a tank driving over a footpath."
The operator got out of the truck without comment. She strode over to the sign as if to verify, and then rounded the front of the truck to the driver's side.
"I'll take over," she said, opening Gus's door. "No one following us."
"But they will," he said.
Collie smiled.
"They'll try."
"We there yet?" Bruno asked, careful not to disturb little Monica cuddled in his arm.
"Not yet," Collie said, getting behind the wheel. "Give us another 2 hours or so."
"That far?"
"That far."
She checked the fuel gauge. Gus knew what she was seeing.
"We got a quarter of a tank left," she said.
"Yeah," he agreed.
"It's gonna be close."
"How close?"
Collie fixed him with a neutral look before driving off the highway.
"Pay attention now," she said and pointed. "You remember the way?"
"Who, me?" he asked. "Hell no. I was stoned for most of the ride here, and I wasn't driving on the way out."
"Well, don't worry," she assured him. "I got this."
Gus hoped so.
He glanced out the window and studied the deserted highway behind them. As they advanced, the highway disappeared behind a screen of trees. Gravel and rocks popped under the tires, and potholes made the ride a jumpy one. He settled back, bracing for the deeper drops. The forest thickened into a spotty blend of orange and yellow held up by columns of wrinkled brown. They drove deep into those backwoods, and more than once the road forked off to destinations unknown. Collie kept the truck moving forward without hesitation. Gus tried to remember each turn, tried to commit a landmark to memory, but soon gave up and left the driving to her. He cracked a window, allowing fresh and surprisingly warm air to flood the interior. Soon the trees parted, framing a set of mountains in the distance.
"That's it?" Gus asked.
"Not quite."
"We're getting closer, though, right?" Bruno asked.
"No,"
Collie said as they bounced past a no trespassing sign.
"Not even close. This whole network was designed to confuse Joe Blow from getting anywhere near the base. There were hidden guard posts about halfway in, where security started taking a special interest in anyone ignoring the signs. You know about the men in black?"
"Yeah," Bruno said.
"Well, we had agents in camos stationed all along this road, enough to scare the bejesus out of the nosier types. If you got this far and didn't have the right plastic with you, you were greeted by some very intimidating individuals who wanted to know why."
A nervous Bruno glanced out his window.
"Of course, that was back in the day," Collie said. "Now not so much."
They scaled a small hill, the road bordered with smashed trees, the splintered branches left upon the shoulders. The whole road was like that, hinting at the passage of a massive piece of machinery.
"Christ almighty," Gus said. "That thing just fucks up landscapes as it goes along."
"Easy to see why they had it."
"What are you talking about?" Sarah Burton asked.
"You'll see," Gus said, then to Collie. "How's the gas?"
She shook her head. "Remember when I said it was going to be close?"
"Yeah."
Well, I might have been wrong.
That worried Gus. He wasn't looking forward to another hike in the woods, road or no road. His legs hadn't recovered from the day before. Hoping to God above that the truck made it all the way, he sat back and watched the wilderness roll by. One thing for certain, they wouldn't get lost. Not when the mighty Komatsu truck from days gone by had left its mark upon the world. An hour and change later, the pickup began to gasp and sputter. Gus sat up and glanced over at Collie. She stopped the truck and met his worried stare.
"Don't tell me we walk from here on," Gus asked.
She answered with a sad smile and cracked open her door.
"Everyone out," she ordered. "From here on we walk."
"Fuck," Gus silently mouthed.
"What?"
Sarah Burton asked from the rear seat, shoving her glasses up on her nose with a single finger.
"What does that mean? I mean, how far do we have to walk?"
She got out of the truck with the others and faced Collie on the other side. "Another hour," the operator reported, retrieving her rifle. "Sorry, I had no say in where the place was built." Corey stood beside Bruno, and little Monica was between both men, nervously watching the exchange. The others formed up in front of the dead truck. Allie was there, the quiet woman they'd freed not so long ago, as well as Jane Wong and Jeremy Walton. Rich Trinidad was there as well, which at a quick count placed the total number of survivors at an even 10.
"It'll go faster if we start walking right now," Collie said. "Gather up whatever you got left."
"There's nothing left," Sarah Burton said.
"Nothing?"
"We unloaded everything back at Lazy Lou's," Sarah answered. "Wasn't much to begin with. Just some dried meats and preserves. Stuff that would last a few months if we had needed them. Thing was, we didn't really expect to have to need it."
"Not at this stage," Jane Wong added in a quiet voice.
Collie studied them each in turn. "This way," she said. She started marching, holding her rifle two-handed.
"Wish I had a shoulder strap for this bastard," she muttered under her breath.
The group followed her. Gus lagged a bit, watching the road, but not able to see very far back.
"You coming?" Rich Trinidad asked, walking backwards.
Gus took one last look before picking up the pace. The vulture sat in the formidable cab of the biofuel-burning Mack truck. His elbow lay upon the windowsill, his fingers tapping out a slow cadence of impatience, one that would irritate anyone listening. The driver, another masked individual, simply lowered his head and awaited orders. Chrome spikes lined his knuckles, which only tightened upon the steering wheel. The vulture wondered where their quarry thought they were going. He had reasoned that the bedroom store had been a gathering place for survivors in the event the island was attacked, but he didn't know where they would go after that. However, it was clear they were heading somewhere, somewhere with a purpose rather than fleeing into the Canadian wild. Perhaps another place Carson had chosen not to reveal despite the leather's best attempts at persuasion. He might have to interrogate the mechanic again. But he wondered how much damage Carson could take before he became completely useless. In any case, this area was littered with dirt roads that snaked off into the wild, most adorned with no trespassing signs and the like. The road itself wasn't a wide one, but wide enough to fit the Mack truck. Distinct prints stretched beyond the gravel, flattening the earth on either side, as if a pair of transport trucks or even bulldozers had gone over them multiple times side by side. These prints continued along the roads the leather ignored, crushing and leaving a terrible stamp upon the countryside. The vulture doubted that bulldozers had been used, but something had done that to the earth. Something remarkably heavy. The vulture's eyes shifted to his side mirror. Framed there was a long train of vehicles, including fuel tankers. Individuals clad in shining leather rode those machines. Some were visible behind the windshields, while others stood in the box beds of pickup trucks, leering over the roofs like polished gargoyles. They were mechanized titans, fuel-injected warlords. And in this new world, they were the last remaining road clan of any notable power, laying claim to whatever spoils remained. The vulture's eyes drifted from the mirror to the huge skull bolted down on the Mack truck's hood. The skull shivered from the mighty machines idling.
Not 30 feet away from the chrome teeth of the machine was a pickup truck. Two of the leather stood in its box bed as sunlight flashed off the welded majesty of assorted plates and pipes. One of the leather glanced back at their leader's ride, waiting for a signal, while the second leather watched over a cage hitched to the rear of the pickup. Leather reins stretched tightly down over the top of the cage's bars, lashed to individual harnesses worn by a clutch of emaciated manhounds. The mindless were stick-thin and dressed in rags more filth than fiber. The heads of those feral creatures whipped about as they strained against their bonds, trying to break free, eager to chase down the meat tainted with the scent. They were wretched things, masked, with hair sticking out from necklines that hung past their shoulders. The vulture often wondered just how far the manhounds could track their prey when the scent of urine was applied. He believed they had an even stronger sense of smell than dogs, which could smell a female in heat up to 4 kilometers away. These creatures had proven to be much more powerful trackers, even when the scent they used had almost lost its strength. The distance from a relatively fresh scent was even easier for them to track. So when the road split off in a direction that seemed counterintuitive to those menacing tire tracks, the pickup pulling the cage slowed to a stop. The manhounds would either gravitate to whatever side the scent pulled them, or they would remain stationary. Sort of like a much meatier set of divining rods. And right now, that frightful pack wanted very much to get moving in one direction, towards a side road stamped by those troubling tracks. Where it would all lead, the vulture had no idea. Tucking that thought away, he stuck his hand out the window and chopped at the air. The pickup truck turned onto the side road and crept forward until the manhounds shifted to that side of the cage. Their heads bobbed as they took in the rancid stink trail. The vulture gave his driver the signal to follow. And no more than 15 minutes later, they discovered the abandoned escape vehicle belonging to their quarry.
"I'm gonna need a new pair of boots after all this," Gus muttered.
"We got boots at the base," Collie informed him. "Any size you want, as long as you're not too picky about the style. All made in China."
"Got sneakers?"
"Of course we got sneakers. Clothes, too. Right down to your tidy-whities and pinchy panties. But nothing too fancy there, so don't expect much."
Gus wiped his sweaty hands on his jeans.
"When this is all over, I'm going to get into shape. I don't care what it takes. Hiking, your self-defense shit. Don't care."
"Duly noted."
Those deep tire prints lining either side of the dirt road drew his eyes once again.
"Never realized how damn big that thing was."
"Well," Collie said, sparing the tracks a glance. "We were being shot at, if you remember."
"Maybe we should take the thing back to the coast."
Collie's mouth hitched into a half smile.
"Yeah, right. That thing would eat us out of house and home."
"Yeah, I suppose so."
The road curved, a long, gradual bend that was hidden by forest. Gus looked back at the others, straining to keep pace with Collie. Rich Trinidad, holding rear guard, met his stare with a menacing glower. Gus turned back to Collie.
"That Rich guy is a fierce one."
"One in every group," Collie said.
She nodded ahead.
"Look."
The dirt road straightened into a long stretch of pavement, and the forest cleared around them. The land had been cleared some 50 meters or so, leading up to a fixed perimeter where a stout building had been constructed. A checkpoint, distinctly military, with broad concrete partitions, heavy-duty chain-link fences, and decorative razor wire that stretched out on either side. Abundant warning signs gave precise instructions on how to proceed. Pillboxes flanked the main building, equipped with what looked like drooping machine guns. The big kind. The 50-caliber kind. Armored cameras the size of mailboxes were mounted on the building's roof, monitoring incoming and departing traffic. There were red and green queue zones for vehicles, a pair of two-lane roads that bordered either side of the building. The lift bar with the red stop sign remained lowered on the right side, but the left was in tatters. Smashed lift bar, twisted wire fence, crushed concrete partition, which was where the Komatsu truck presumably had entered.
"She didn't fit," Gus observed quietly.
"Apparently not," Collie agreed. "But they still got the big girl's ass through.
She turned to face the rest of the group. Stay behind me. Don't wander off the path and don't go into the woods to take a leak unless you see a crater and a clear path to get to it.
Why's that? Sarah Burton asked.
That means someone already stepped on the mine.
That silenced the lot of them and made them visibly uneasy. They gravitated towards the middle of the pavement and the broken white lines painting it. The wire fences stretched out on either side, eventually disappearing from view. Unchallenged, the little group walked through the queue zones, peeking inside the open door of the checkpoint building. It resembled a small office, one that the janitorial staff hadn't visited in a few years. Kali stopped at the open door and inspected the interior.
Any guns in there? Gus asked.
She shook her head.
Picked clean. Too bad they didn't do any other cleaning.
There were other buildings inside the perimeter's fortifications, low structures built of brick and steel with grime-caked windows and open doorways. A few scraps of cardboard littered the edges of concrete and the pavement beyond where the road continued.
Bunkhouses? Gus asked.
Barracks. Waiting stations. For the quick reaction teams.
Gus guessed at what that meant.
Any guns in there?
You're not happy with yours?
I'm just wondering.
You can check, but I'm guessing no. Shovel's group probably took everything. All the good stuff is in there.
She pointed toward the complex's interior buildings, which resembled a small alpine town. Rising beyond all that was Whitecap. Impassive, awesome, and indifferent, wearing a tattered cloak of forest around its shoulders. The dark tunnel mouth resembled an unpleasant maw where a pale tongue of a blacktop unfurled in a long ramp, ending in a tangle of destruction that brought back memories for Gus. It was difficult to locate a spot on the complex grounds that wasn't littered with debris. Motorhomes had had their faces bashed in, their fiberglass asses crushed. Trailers had been upended and left for ruin. Smashed vehicles littered the compound, many of which had exploded and were now in multiple piles. Garbage bins had been overturned as if picked up by giants, shaken empty and thrown to the earth. Broken glass covered the white concrete in wide sprays and glittered under the sun. Brass shell casings gleamed in fragmented streams. Just below Whitecap's mountain entrance was the unmoving iron husk that was the dead Komatsu truck. The vehicle was still upright, parked at the end of that shocking path of ruin. All four tires were intact. The considerable length of metal that was the flatbed lay on its side, bent at a subtle crook across the behemoth's face. And in that deep reflection of battles fought and finished, in that serene mountain silence, Sarah Burton said it first, perhaps even said it best.
The fuck happened here?
24.
This way, Kali said, herding the little group across that junkyard landscape.
They tromped over concrete and glass, their sneakers and boots crinkling upon far-reaching streaks of debris.
Watch your footing, she warned,
but even Gus had trouble minding that one. The newcomers' attention strayed, taking in their surroundings and the leftovers of a small war. Cars and trucks half-flattened by the Komatsu truck, sofas and chairs hanging out of RVs, glass framework bent into angular puzzles and left for garbage, a wall of shredded sandbags. There was even a trail of twisted pipework and fittings that ended in a kitchen sink lying half a football field away from the nearest destroyed motorhome. More than one high-tech rifle was discarded on that plain of rubble, the most notable of which had a bent barrel.
Those gas tankers have anything in them?
Rich Trinidad asked from the rear.
Maybe, but I doubt the octane levels are there, Kali said.
Gus studied the great white plain and all the shit covering it, destruction he left during their escape from Whitecap. Whitecap's maw loomed closer, while a white cloud as fine as silk stretched out across the mountain's heights. There were other rock formations behind that towering peak, but Whitecap was the tallest, the most imposing. With every step toward Whitecap's entrance, the massacred machinery and debris cleared a little more. Beyond the sandbag line, however, the group could make out hundreds of desiccated bodies splayed out over a wide area. Gus heard Bruno telling Monica not to look. The crows had feasted. Sand spilled from the destroyed wall, covering a few of the corpses, but not nearly enough.
There were hundreds, although after the long winter, you really couldn't tell where one body ended and another began. Rotten eye sockets stared, skulls bared teeth, bony torsos wearing rags stretched out as if catching some sun. Collie sped towards the ramp, picking up the pace.
"You gotta use the can or something?" Gus asked.
She didn't answer. Instead, she picked up the pace even more until she reached the base of the paved slope. Decayed remains covered this area too, shredded and torn apart by Shovel's minigun. The sight of all those dead husks caused her to turn around. She surveyed the mass destruction surrounding the camp, adjusting her shades as she did so.
"You really did a number on this place, buddy," she said.
"You were with me," Gus reminded her.
"You were driving."
That shut him up. Collie turned to the rest of the group.
"All right, watch your footing from here on out. It looks all clear to me, but just be careful."
They weren't looking at her, not really. They were looking at the ramp.
"Oh, my gentle Jesus,"
the one called Allie quietly remarked, and Gus couldn't remember her saying a word until that moment.
"We have to go up there?" Sarah Burton asked.
"If you want to see the bunker, you do,"